Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'd like to plug the Chase Thomas podcast. Listen to Chase Thomas. You'll be a smarter sports fan and obviously a much better human being.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here, and I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka versus Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, down there in Decula, Georgia itself. Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It is good to be back with you on a Sunday night. Mm-hmm. As the reigning national champions of college football once again, we had to keep the festivities going, you know, into this week after an excellent week for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Man, still feeling pretty good. Have you rewatched the game since it happened?
I actually have. Okay. So very next day, I just stumbled upon just some like little 15-minute highlight of the game that was just basically every key play. And I watched that, and I was like, I feel like I basically watched the game. But no, the other night I was like, I have to rewatch the game because, you know, it's funny when you rewatch some games, it's like you're like the Ohio State game. It's like, I don't necessarily want to watch Ohio State drive down the field and score on us easily. So you might fast forward a little bit, get to the good stuff for Georgia. Mm-hmm. But in this one, it was like every single series is just like, oh, it's a touchdown. It's a touchdown. It's a touchdown. It's a field goal. It's a touchdown. It's a touchdown. Or it's a pick on defense. It's a forced fumble. It's a three and out. It's a sack. It's another pick. It's like the entire, other than the one busted coverage in the first half. So it was like, it's kind of insane. Like when you watch a game, lots of times you're watching some of these blowouts, like maybe you win 45-7 and you're up 38-3 or 38-0 at the half or something like that. And you're like, okay, I basically saw all the scoring, but this game's 38-7. You're like, wait, we're like halfway to our total right now. Mm-hmm. What we're going to do. You just kept watching, and even the game in garbage time, George just kept moving the ball. It was insane. Honestly, I don't even know if we talked about the game enough last week because it was just like such a beatdown. It's like, what is there to say? Georgia's like running college football now. But it's insane the numbers they put up, because it's like, it's really just, that was the question about Georgia. Like, they've been so dominant, but it's like, how good is the offense, you know? And it's like, for them to score the most points in the history of a bowl game, like any bowl game ever, biggest point, biggest margin in a bowl game ever, not just the national championship, but just any bowl game, like to score 65 points is just insane. Like, we know TCU wasn't like the best defense in the country, but they weren't giving up a lot of points. Like, they weren't doing anything like that. This wasn't a Oklahoma team traditionally coming out of the Big 12, but yeah, it just looked real easy. And that was, watching it again on replay, it was like, it really was. That Stetson Bennett touchdown that was just a walk-in, where he, like, two guys, not only was Stetson untouched, but Broderick Jones and Kendall Milton blocking for him were untouched. Like, that's when it was like, okay, this is going to be too easy. I was reminded of NoSean Marino against Hawaii, where he just gave it the two-hand, like, this is too easy. Get out of here. What are we doing on the field with this team?
Different vibe, though, because I remember that was one of those, because, I mean, you know, I'm a big Hawaii guy and a big Cole Brennan guy. Obviously, was going pretty hardcore for Hawaii in that game. But I also went into it, was like, probably not gonna win that game. And it was one of those weird ones where Georgia fans were really proud of blasting Hawaii in that moment. I don't know if it was because they were annoyed they got Hawaii in that spot with the kind of season they have, but they were really proud of just destroying those two-star offensive linemen, getting to Colt Brennan, really, really wrecking havoc.
But if
there,
you remember, there was a lot of people that were picking Hawaii. Like, they were
that
undefeated.
Was our hearts.
Like,
we were doing it with our hearts, not our minds.
I remember the ex. I remember Mark May and Lou Holtz on ESPN, or whoever they had at the time. Picking against multiple people picking against Georgia, because I think that Hawaii team was undefeated and it was this, you know, exciting offense and everything. So I don't know. I think the black jerseys just get the fans going. So it was like the fact that you rock the black jerseys again in the Sugar Bowl, and it was like such a beat down. It was, I mean, it was good stuff. It was.
When do we see those?
It
again?
Was obviously
we see them again this year.
We'll see him in the spring game and every recruiting picture, but I don't know, man. I can't explain why Georgia doesn't wear the black jerseys for it.
Oh, well, here's a question. What do you think we so see sick. First? The all white with the white helmets, or the black the black jerseys with the red helmets?
No, I don't think I don't know if we'll ever see the white helmets, but I mean, it wasn't a bad look, but hopefully we just see the black jerseys. Like, that's all we need. Like, We even changed up with the throwbacks a couple years ago. I mean, we did rock black, I should say, in 2020. They rocked black twice. But it was those dog collar.
Those were not
the ones that I was just not a fan of. So just the simple black alternate, it's like one of the best uniforms out there. Like, I wish Georgia would rock it at least once a year at home or something. Or just like a... maybe you only rock red at home, so it's like you an opportunity like at LSU or something, like where you're gonna, I don't know, something like that, where you're gonna be wear your home jersey, but you can rock an alternate, kind of like Tennessee did at LSU this year, rock the gray, like or SEC championship, college football playoff, like, let's bust them out. We've seen Georgia win a title in red and in white, like, but bust out the black next time you're in the national title game, like that. I'd be all for it.
I'm going to go ahead and guess Tennessee doesn't bring the orange helmets back anytime soon. I think those are dead for the foreseeable future. I don't know if we'll see those again.
No.
I think those are goners.
They were worth a shot. Like, I'll give them. I don't hate them for trying. But once you saw them on the field, it was like, is this Clemson? Like,
well, that's not the issue. It was getting blasted by South Carolina in them in the debut.
There is that. But I think Tennessee just... stick with their all white, like, and their occasional the gray alternate, but yeah.
I mean, they're going to do the black once a year, and they'll do the gray once a year, and then they'll do the orange and white for the rest of it. But the black and gray are not going anywhere.
The black's here to stay. I don't know. The black's questionable. I'm a fan of the gray. Black, you know, well.
I don't know. The black. I think with the black helmets, you didn't like that. It looked good.
It looked good. It's just not Tennessee. I think the identity of the uniform is just very important to me. It's like Georgia doesn't lose any identity with the black jerseys. You know, they always rock red and black. Like Tennessee, I give them a little bit of leeway because they only have like two colors. It's like orange and white. So I give them the leeway with the gray for the Smokies, but then you got the black too. Like, I don't know. It's better than Iowa State rocking black and white. That's for sure. Like, I'll give Tennessee that. And they actually look good. They were good looking uniforms, but
yeah.
I don't know. I have my own thing as a uniform guy, so it's probably pretty inconsistent.
Well, Matt, you were at the University of Georgia championship parade this weekend. Was it cold? What was it like? It looked cold. I feel like back-to-back years, it's been like just really, really cold temperatures. Probably because hell freezing over, or there's something to Georgia going back-to-back. There has to be something there. But what was the experience like, Matt Green?
I'm sure it has nothing to do with it being the second week of January or
seems
anything
irrelevant.
Like that. But I don't miss a championship parade, sir. That's bottom line. I was not aware of championship parades back in 95 for the Atlanta Braves, so I get the pass for that one. Mm-hmm. But all three that we've gotten with the Braves and these Georgia back to backs gotta be a part of the crowd. Just see Kirby and the fellas. Just the streets of Athens just packed. It was cool. And then we went downtown to Creature Comforts after. So it was like it's a good time hang out in Athens. So yeah, gotta do it.
Did you call out anybody? Like, did you run into anybody at the game? Like, or at the parade? Did you run into Kirby or anybody while you're walking around?
No, I didn't have any sort of like celebrity sighting or anything.
No.
I did see Keely Ringo's mom at one point. She seems like a low key celebrity. Hmm. But I didn't.
For good reason.
Yeah, she really is. She's a great, great story and everything. So, but yeah, that was a good time in Athens.
There you go. And we should also say, I mean, just horrific stuff coming out. We're taping this late on a Sunday, but what came out early Sunday morning with a University of Georgia interior lineman passing away, a recruiting assistant also passing away in a car accident late on Sunday. But just, I mean, horrific, horrific stuff. And I mean, just the range of emotions for the players in that team, right? Like, you're spending the day celebrating back-to-back titles, and with him, like, he's involved in all of that. And he started a lot of games this year, correct? Devin Willock.
He did. I think he'd have the fourth most snaps for any returning offensive lineman. Obviously had this not occurred in football, what he does as a football player is obviously totally irrelevant to the bigger picture of, you know, losing your life at 20 years old. And as well as, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on Chandler LaCroix, mm-hmm. the Georgia football staffer as well. So yeah, super sad, especially like you said, such a happy moment celebrating a championship. And then Warren McClendon and another staffer, I don't know her name, were, I guess, also in the car. So they were hospitalized, but I think they're doing okay. But yeah, really, really sad stuff.
It's just crazy. I mean, hey, that's just crazy. You never know. And just, I don't know. I cannot imagine like what Kirby had to say and those families are dealing with, because like, again, just the highest of highs and just that kind of tragedy in the same basically 24-hour period is just horrific. Like, there's nothing else you can say. It's crazy, horrific, and life can be really scary and just really not fair. Like, that's just...
Yeah, and apparently his half-brother, Devin Willock's half-brother back in 2009, also died in a car accident when he was also 20 years old, and like a car accident like the middle of the night too. So it's like... The parents, well, I don't know whichever parent, but yeah, having to go through that like a second time with a 20-year-old child, like that's super sad. So rest in peace, like, you know, thoughts for those families for sure.
Absolutely. Switching gears a little bit, before this episode is going to be, with it being the off season now, officially our first off season episode, Matt Green, we have different ideas that we're going to do each week. We're going to obviously be going back to a once a week show with no games to preview and all that here in the off season. But this is a 24-hour sport now, and there's 24-hour, 7-day-a-week sport now. especially 24 hour with the transfer portal. If you keep up with that all day, like me, being a sicko, just like, oh, is that Cormani McLean popping up at Colorado? But yeah, we're gonna see.
That time of the year, sir.
It is that time of the year, and the deadline for a certain quarterback, and really everybody who's gonna enter in the NFL draft, the deadline is January 16th, and C.J. Stroud, who we last saw play the game of his career to this point against Georgia in Atlanta, and obviously came up just short, but did everything he could, left it all on the field. I think won a lot of people over who were skeptical about him all season long, and you just assumed he was going to enter the draft, like be a top four, top five pick. But then you, like, I look at different mocks all the time too. He's been behind Will Levis and Bryce Young for a while. Like, Bryce Young is the consensus number one, but Will Levis is above him in everything I've seen still. And I don't know. I wonder if he's been told he might fall out of the top 10, or he's worried about where he might go. I don't know. He has to make a decision by Monday evening, and we're at the deadline. It's kind of weird that he is has not officially declared. Like, Blake Corum's back at Michigan, but he's a running back, a little bit different. Running backs don't go in the first round anymore. Like, he has some unfinished business at Michigan. He got hurt and was knocked out down the stretch, and he could. It's a great story, him coming back and trying to get it back and get Michigan back to the playoff and get a win in year three of trying this gambit in Ann Arbor. But I don't know. What do you think about CJ Stroud still just kind of on the fence here? What do you think he should do?
I mean, you think he's got unfinished business at the college level as well? Like, hasn't won a Big Ten title as a starter, like hasn't won a college football playoff game, you know, hasn't won a Heisman, you know, he's a two-time finalist. But, you know, with this NIL stuff, like Columbus, you know, that's one of the bigger cities, you know, that's if not like the biggest city that a major Power Five program is in. Austin would probably be is a bigger city, but Columbus, that's like a top 25 market, I think, in the country. So, you know, there's a chance the NIL stuff being the quarterback at Ohio State, that you don't necessarily need the money as much as guys once did coming out of the draft. But I would just think, obviously, he can accomplish more at Ohio State. So if he just loves Ohio State and he wants to win a national championship, like, that's his thing. But, I mean, it's hard to tell someone they should not go pro and they're going to be a top five pick. Like, I hear, yeah, I see the same mock drafts you do where he's like maybe the third quarterback picked after Will Levis, and I just don't believe it. It's like, I'll believe it when I see it. Like, CJ Stroud's always been considered better than Will Levis, and because Mel Kiper has Will Levis up here, like, that's going to influence what all these NFL teams are doing. Like, I'll believe that when I see it. I think there's no chance CJ Stroud goes any later than like fifth in the draft. And it's just, how do you turn that down? So, you know, it's interesting the fact that if you're listening to this on Monday, it's obviously that's going to be the deadline. And he still hasn't declared as of this point, but it is worth noting. But surely he's going to announce that he's going pro before the deadline.
Yeah, but we'll see ultimately what happens here. They lost their big 2024 number one consensus quarterback. What was his name? Raiola? Is that his name?
Dylan Raiola. Yeah, number one player in the country in 2024. The crystal balls are coming in for Georgia on Raiola. So, you know, Georgia didn't get a quarterback in this 2023 class. So, I mean, they have, I think it's Ryan Puglisi. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, from like Connecticut or something. He's like a top 10 quarterback that's currently committed to Georgia in that class. But yeah, I think if Raiola commits, like, I think he's definitely he's gonna, you know, move and shake the quarterback recruiting landscape around.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Ultimately, still a lot of time. I don't know the latest on Jadon Rashada. I don't think he was not registered. I remember seeing that on Twitter. There's like Florida beat writers who are monitoring class ad drop and like registration for Rashada. And last I saw, he wasn't. So I don't know what that means. If that matters that he's not in classes this semester. I don't know, man. That's an absolute mess. at UF and just
yeah, I mean, it sounds like a NIL, someone backed out of an NIL deal or something like that, and that's why Rashada's not enrolling. I don't know. It's a crazy situation. I don't know. I mean, he was committed to Miami at one point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we don't know. But whatever we do know, the optics are bad. There's a Freudian slip there. Are just bad. And I... No matter what happens from here on out, I think this is just not good from a recruiting optic standpoint for future recruits. So they gotta clean this up in a hurry.
Yeah, and I think there's something to it. Like early on, getting that big five-star quarterback commit. Like I think that there's just something. Now that I think about it, like there's so many you can kind of name. Like with Kirby and like Jacob Eason, with Heupel's gotten Nico committed. Like. You know, you go back to Mark Richt getting like DJ Shockley, like his first year. It's like there's something to that kind of that big time quarterback buying in early to just kind of, you know, influence the direction of your program. And so to lose a guy like we were all already questioning the direction of Florida's program under Napier. And now you got something like this going on that's, you know, also going to derail the recruiting class. Like it's not looking good down on the swamp.
No, might be a full season of Graham Mertz, Mr. Macarine. So that might be the situation here.
Anthony Richardson to Graham Mertz. It doesn't get much different than that.
No. Well, we're going to do our coordinator carousel episode here tonight, Matt Green, because there's been a lot of coordinator changes, a lot of transfer quarterback changes, and we'll get into some more transfer stuff in the offseason, even some head coaching changes. But we've done that a little bit back in December when the regular season wrapped up. And I kind of wanted to do the coordinator one because I think this is really, really fascinating to see a lot of these guys bounce around, some stunners who went to new schools. And I think we kind of overlook where a program's going and just put so much on the head coach where it's like, you need to look at the coordinators, like going from Coley to Jeff to Todd Monken. It's a big deal for the Dogs. That changed a lot of Georgia's trajectory here. And they were at a crossroads where it's like, this is not working. Kirby's got to evolve. All right, I'm going to go get Todd Monken and we're going to change in a major way, and they did, and are now won back-to-back titles. So I think people can overlook this stuff a little bit too much when it comes to coordinators because they are extremely important to where your university and your team and program is going on a year-to-year basis. And I want to read these off, and then we're going to get into some broad questions and then break down the different ones. But I have nine that I wanted to hit on tonight. Garrett Riley to Clemson. Pete Golding to Ole Miss, and we'll add some Alabama stuff there too. Bobby Petrino to Texas A&M. Kevin Barbet to Mississippi State. Sean Lewis to Colorado. Chip Lindsey to UNC. Dal Logans to South Carolina. Phil Longo to Wisconsin. And Jay Hill to BYU, Matt Green. So of that list, which one do you like the most? Which coordinator jump do you like the most for that program?
I think the easy answer is Garrett Riley, right? I think that just not only is he the best coach hired on this list, but he's just the most surprising. Like with how Clemson has been doing things, like I think this is a huge, like, I don't know, just not red flag, but it's a huge sign that like Dabo is kind of aware of where this program is, like what he's aware of the national perception of this program right now, and he's aware that something needs to be done and like a big change needs to happen. So I think there were some people who kind of thought like there's a chance, at least a distant thought in my head, that like maybe that 2013 2014 to 2020 run of Clemson football is just the golden era of Clemson football. We're never going to see that again. But to get a guy like Garrett Riley, like I was kind of surprised because as the Broyles Award winner, like obviously Clemson is a more big time job. I don't know the numbers, but I'm sure they can pay Garrett Riley more than TCU could. But being the Broyles Award winner at TCU, he didn't necessarily need to go make a lateral move. I kind of thought his next step would be a head coaching job. So I was a little surprised from that standpoint. But I think this is massive for Clemson. I think he could – I think they needed something like this. I think he could do big things for sure.
Yeah, I thought he was just going to wait out Jimbo, right? Like just wait out Jimbo for a little bit longer and then just get the head job over at Texas A&M. But you know, I think it's one, like you said, I think the biggest thing is we questioned going into last year if it was wise for Jimbo or for Dabo to run it back and just promote from within with Goodman and Mickey Kahn, Grayson head coach legend, working the defense, and then Brandon Streeter, who'd been with them a long time. I know he was Trevor Lawrence's guy, his QB coach and stuff like that, but it did not work. And I mean, they had 100 plays against Tennessee in the Orange Bowl and just had no points to show for him. The offense just wasn't working. DJU did not work out over 2 years, and he's a five-star kid, and they did not keep that thing moving and keep it humming. And with Cade Klubnik in the fold, that you can't mess up two back-to-back five stars, or that just, I think it starts to leave an impression on those talented quarterbacks around the country. We're like, I don't think they're developing quarterbacks like they used to. I think we're going to go somewhere else. And then that changes the trajectory a little bit with the Clemson program. But I didn't see this coming. Like, I didn't see him actually going down. I thought Dabo would be more, would see this through a little bit longer than at least a year with Streeter and company. Like, I thought he's a pretty loyal dude and would keep it going. But Jeff Scott, I think, is coming back as some kind of analyst, assistant, or whatever after being fired from USF. So he's entering back into the fold to help there. But, I mean, it's obviously an upgrade, right, talent-wise for Garrett Riley. He gets to work with, obviously, one of the premier groups in the country. He gets to work with Cade Klubnik, who, I mean, this is a huge win for him if you're Cade Klubnik's family. And if you're a Clemson fan, like, this is like, if you were getting nervous about the direction of the program under Dabo with a lot of the departures, what this looked like against Tennessee in the bowl game, and just not looking like the same Clemson of old the last couple of years since Trevor Lawrence departed, well, this, I think, is kind of a home run, like you said. Like, I think this is like a commitment to, hey, this year happened. This is not going to be the trend going forward. We have an expectation of dominance on both sides of the ball year in, year out. We recruit at a high level. We spend a bunch of money on this football program. You guys spend a bunch of money on this football program. We're going to get it right and work to get it right every year. And that makes it kind of a cutthroat type thing, but it's like, we're going to go get the best offensive coordinator on the market who might not even be on the market. We're just going to go take some big swings. And they did, and they go out and get Garrett Riley. I think it's a home run thing. TCU finished 9th in scoring last year. Clemson was 30th. Shane Beamer can deny he wanted Garrett Riley all he wanted, but like, hey, I'm sure every South Carolina fan is just like, yeah, we're good with Dally. Like, you can have Garrett Riley. We wanted, how did he do against Georgia in the national title game? 7 points? Like, who wants Garrett Riley under those circumstances?
I was going to say, that's what Dabo saw. He was like, we only managed 3 against Georgia. This guy got 7. Let's bring him on. That's a championship recipe.
Yeah, and it's one that I think Notre Dame refused to make during the Brian Kelly era, now with Marcus Freeman, where I don't know why they won't do it, where it's like Tommy Rees is still just, he's just there, and you're like, the offense has never been elite. Like, they never kind of venture out. Like, Tommy Rees, obviously a longtime Notre Dame quarterback, and Notre Dame guy, and I think they've stuck with Chip Long for a little bit too long, and you're like, you got to get bold at some point. Like, Notre Dame actually recruits at an elite level these days, and I wondered if Marcus Freeman would go bold this offseason or when he came in, of like, we're Tommy Rees, we appreciate it and everything that you've done for Notre Dame football, but we're going to go in a different direction here a little bit because that offense still isn't humming, and they're recruiting at that level. But I don't know. I think for Clemson, if you're a Clemson fan, and I think for you and I, this changes how we view Clemson going into 2023, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's definitely an expectation that, I mean, this was Garrett Riley's first year at TCU, obviously with Sonny Dykes being his first year as the head coach. So, I mean, he did wonders in 1 year. And Clemson, I mean, let's be honest, Clemson probably has better players than TCU, with all respect to how good their skill players on this particular offense were. Clemson just usually recruits at a better level. So, I mean, yeah, I would imagine Garrett Riley's going to have some talent to work with.
For sure. Which hire of that list did you like the least, Matt Green, for this program?
I got to go Pete Golding. That's the one that I think is I think really remains to be seen, because it's like, did he leave Alabama for Ole Miss, or did Alabama say, hey, why don't you go look for another job at Ole Miss? Like, why don't you go see what else you can have? We're probably going to try to upgrade. So, I mean, you just look like what are you really getting with Pete Golding? I mean, you look at Alabama, the last 15 years, they've had 11 top 10 defenses, scoring defenses. One of those was in the last 5 years under Pete Golding. Like, from 2008 to 2017, Alabama's average defense was ranked third, giving up 13.1 points per game over like almost a decade. And for Pete Golding's 5 years, their average is 13th. This is still Alabama. It's not bad. But they're giving up an average of 18.9 points per game the last 5 years. And it's just like, we know the talent that Alabama's getting. We saw what Kirby Smart was doing with this defense. We saw what Jeremy Pruitt did with this defense. And then Pete Golding came along, and it's just not at the same level. It's good now, but good is not what Alabama prides himself on. And they want to be elite. They want to be the best in the country. So I'm really curious to see where Alabama goes, because like Ole Miss, they need a savior for this defense. Like, you've seen on Lane Kiffin, one of the years they were like 100th in the country in defense. Like, this past couple years, I think they were 50th. Like, they're
57th.
Like, they have not been good defensively. They need someone to you know, completely change that. And based on what Pete Golding's done at Alabama, like, I'm not really sure that much is really going to change.
I think you're being a little bit too hard on Pete Golding, but I also think you're not taking enough into account. It's Ole Miss, Matt Green. Like, this is a huge win, I think, for Ole Miss. Like, they were ninth. Bama was ninth in scoring defense. Ole Miss was 57th. Like, there's no way Pete Golding's worse than Chris Partridge this past year. There's no way Ole Miss's defense gets worse with Pete Golding coming into the fray. Like, I mean,
but the players are a lot worse at Ole Miss than they're going to be at Alabama, playing against very similar competition in the SEC West.
I just feel like this is kind of a gift hire for Kiffin, where, I mean, obviously they crossed paths when he was at Bama with Pete Golding. I don't know. It's like, we're going to find out the chops for Pete Golding, right? Where it's like, you've been under the Saban umbrella, where it's hard to figure out some of these guys, like, are they good, are they not, because they played at Alabama or they coached at Alabama. It's like, what would they look like in an average scheme or an average supporting cast? Like, we're about to learn right away if Pete Golding is a good standalone defensive coordinator at Ole Miss, like you said, where the talent's a little bit different. But Kiffin won 10 games last year, 9 this year. I mean, the dude flirted with back-to-back 10-win seasons with a pretty subpar defense. I think if Pete Golding gets him to, like, 20th, 25th, if he can get him somewhere around there, and their offense is back to where it was 2 years ago with Matt Corral, and Kiffin can get them in that top 10, like, it's another 10, 11, like, you're Ole Miss. Like, national championships are not the expectation. Could they have a really good foundation and a really good program if your base is Pete Golding and Lane Kiffin on both sides of the ball? I think that's a really good place to be.
I mean, I think that's possible. You know, they might not be a juggernaut defensively, but he could make them better than they currently are. But I mean, if you look at it, it's just like Alabama's defensive coordinator, just on paper, look at the resume, Alabama's defensive coordinator leaving to be the defensive coordinator at Ole Miss. It's like, that doesn't really make sense. You know, it's like, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Like, if a guy is just making a lateral move like that from Alabama, there's probably a chance he couldn't cut it at Alabama, honestly, because usually the guys that are leaving for Alabama are leaving for pro jobs or for NFL or for head coaching jobs. So, you know, I think it's, I mean, who've been the last few coordinators to leave Nick Saban? I mean, it's Kirby Smart, it's Jeremy Pruitt on defense, it's
Mel
Sarkisian. It's Lane Kiffin. It's, you know, the list goes on. Yeah, the list goes on. So this guy's leaving for a, you know, a lateral job. It's like, I think it's probably because he wasn't necessarily cut out to be Alabama's defensive coordinator. But it's like, that doesn't mean he's not – that doesn't mean he can't improve Ole Miss's defense. Like you're saying, there's a lot of room for improvement for Ole Miss defensively.
Yeah, I just look at it. If I'm an Ole Miss fan, I'm like, awesome. Let's ride. Like, I'm just – what are your options? Like, could you really have done better than Pete Golding? I don't think so. I think it's a really slam dunk deal if you're Ole Miss. I think we have to readjust our expectations. They're never going to be Bama. They're never going to be Georgia. But they can be really good. They can be a 10-win team, 11-win team when they have the right quarterback and they have the kind of talent you need around this group. I mean, I don't know. I'm still super high on Kiffin and what he's got building there. We'll see how he handles this really weird quarterback room this spring. Because it might include Spencer Sanders, Jackson Dart, and Mike Wright all in the same quarterback room. But we'll see if that ultimately is what happens here. But either way, I think it will be interesting to see. And I think Bama's going to have new coordinators on both sides of the ball, right? I think that's part of where we're going. Like, Bill O'Brien's still the favorite to get the Patriots offensive coordinator job that opened back up because Cliff Kingsbury was like also rumored, and it's like, no, I'm gonna go to Thailand, I'm good for a while, I'm just gonna get away. And I don't know, I think if Bill O'Brien's gone, and then I think that makes sense. We're saving, like, you talk about cutthroat, like, you lost two games by combined 4 points, you're not in the playoff this year. It's like, nope, massive changes. we got a clean house on both sides of the ball. We got to readjust what we're doing. You just signed the best recruiting class in your program's history. You have David Pollack telling you to your face on a broadcast ahead of the national championship that Georgia now runs the sport. I don't know. I think it's going to be very, very fascinating to see where he goes offensively, if that is indeed where things go. But also defensively, like, they hired the whiz kid from friend of the pod, Will Hallstaff, over at Southern Miss, who's done a great job. So I'm excited to see what he means. Austin Armstrong, he's not going to get the full defensive coordinator spot, but he is going to have he's going to have some sort of strong part of this defense. I mean, he ran the nasty bunch defense for the Golden Eagles, and they were really good. They were number 42 in total defense in FBS this past year. Now top 10 in first downs allowed and red zone defense. So I think he's good. Obviously knows Dan Lanning and Kirby Smart well. So we'll see who else they add to the fold. But I think Bama's going to load up. Is it Glenn Schumann? Are my dreams becoming a reality, Matt Green? Could we get both Monken and Glenn Schumann to Alabama? Can we just transfer them both over? Can we do it?
Don't even put that in the atmosphere there, sir. I feel like offensive coordinator, it's going to be like a former head coach. It's going to be a Scott Frost or a Tom Herman or something. I don't know.
Took the FAU job. It can't be Tom Herman.
Is that okay? So it's somebody of
Willie
that.
Taggart.
Yeah, I don't know what he's necessarily proved, but maybe someone a little more proven as a coordinator or as a head coach. But
Dan Mullen would be fun.
Dan Mullen would be real fun. Honestly, that does fit what I just said. But like, hey Dan, don't worry about the recruits. We'll get the recruits.
Yeah, you just focus on being the brilliant offensive mind. Yeah.
No, that would be really interesting, honestly. But looking at defensively though, Glenn Schumann, he's 32 years old. He did go to Alabama. He was a grad assistant in Alabama before Kirby brought him over to Georgia. Schumann and Mel Tucker were the only two guys that Kirby immediately brought over from Alabama when he started at Georgia. And Schumann's been like his protege. So it's hard to see Glenn Schumann leaving Kirby's staff, honestly, at this point. Like, Alabama, I mean, that's as big time as it gets. You are going home. But Kirby Smart had this exact same opportunity. Like, 2010, Georgia tried to make him the defensive coordinator. 2014, Georgia tried to make him the defensive coordinator. Like, and, you know, he didn't make the lateral move, and a couple years later, he's the head coach at Georgia. And so it paid off for him. Like, you look at the last two guys that have been the defensive coordinator at Georgia. Like, Mel Tucker is the head coach at Michigan State. Dan Lanning's the head coach at Oregon. Like, that's that. Those are big time jobs, especially for a guy as young as Schumann. Like, he's 32 years old. Like, the head coaching jobs are going to be there. Like, he's the defensive coordinator at Georgia. You know, 3 or 4 more years. Who knows when Nick Saban retires if Schumann's like a candidate to be the head coach at somewhere like Alabama. Like, I'm not. I think they'd probably go someone more experienced, but it's that same record of Kirby Smart, like, going home. So I don't necessarily see Glenn Schumann, especially you look at what he's built at Georgia, like that inside linebacker room. Like, Georgia's had 6 inside linebackers drafted, 2 in the first round since Schumann took over. And that doesn't even include N'Kobe Dean, who's one of the best of them. And you look at this 2023 class, Georgia signed 3 of the top 5 inside linebackers in the country. It's like they're bringing back Smile Mondon and Dumas Johnson next year. It's like that room is just so loaded. I at this point, like Georgia's a better job than a defensive coordinator. Georgia's a better job than Alabama right now. Like, I think Georgia's recruited better at that position, better collectively defensively in recent years. So it's like Glenn Schumann is part of that. So he knows what they've recruited. So it doesn't seem like it would make sense other than just the just straight up nostalgic feeling of like wanting to go back to Alabama, because that is where he went to college, which is, you know, could always be a pull for somebody. He didn't play Valdosta, there, so though, it right? seems. Say that again.
Isn't he from Valdosta?
I think he is from Georgia. I'm not 100% sure where he's from, but I don't think he played there. So it's a little different than, you know, maybe Kirby Smart actually playing at Georgia than just being a student and being a grad assistant or something. I'm sure he still has a lot of loyalty to Alabama from that perspective. But I don't know. With what Georgia's built on the defensive side of the ball, especially in that inside linebacker room, Glenn Schumann's the one calling the plays with a couple gurus, defensive gurus like Kirby Smart and Will Muschamp on that staff. Like, he's the one that actually calls the plays. So, you know, a head coaching job is right around the corner. So I don't necessarily see him taking the Alabama DC job, but, you know, I wouldn't be shocked.
You wouldn't be shocked?
I wouldn't be shocked just because Alabama is big time. It's not going to be the money, because, like, Georgia can match whatever Alabama can. Is going to throw at him. He's going to get paid this offseason, I'm sure, just from the negotiation or whatever may have you. But he's going to leave at some point. So, like, Alabama, I think, is kind of the only place that probably could prime away from Georgia, unless he wanted to go to the NFL or something like that. But, you know, he's a great recruiter, so those guys seem to do well in college. But at some point, it's going to be Will Muschamp's defense. And I think that's just going to be, like, for whatever decade plus, however long Kirby Smart's at Georgia, I think Muschamp might just run the defense from then on out. But to this point, it's Schumann, and, like, you have to think he's got a head coaching job if he just, you know, waits it out a couple more years.
There you go. Biggest question hire you have. We've already mentioned Garrett Riley, already mentioned Pete Golding. Who do you think is the biggest questionable hire for you among this list for this program, Matt Green?
I think biggest questionable hire to me is Chip Lindsey to North Carolina. I'm like, he's one of these, the line from Office Space, you know, not to be disrespectful here, but, you know, like, what would you say it is you do here? You know, like, with Auburn, like, it felt like Auburn got – he was only there a couple years, but it felt like Jarrett Stidham got worse and worse the longer he was at Auburn. So it's like, you know, maybe that's on Chip Lindsey, maybe it's not. You look at Troy and what they were for a couple years. Like, I think his last year there, they were like 100-something scoring offense in the country. So it's like Chip Lindsey is a name, but, like – I don't know if this feels like such an important hire with a guy like Drake May at quarterback. It's like, you can't screw this up. So, like, I don't know, like, maybe it's possible that you literally can't screw it up and Drake May is going to make whoever's calling plays look good. But, you know, it is at least interesting, like, with what they were at Auburn, like, with Stidham, like, he did have some athletic ability, and Auburn kind of always ran that, like, little, like, spread kind of, they really wanted to run the ball, even though they spread it out. And then having a guy like Drake May, you know, it is interesting, but I do worry about that little. He seems a little unproven to me.
I think so too, and I think if you have any Drake May stock, I would sell it. Like, this is one you would sell. Mm. You mentioned, like, it's not even just the Chip Lindsey thing. Like, the Gus thing was always something that was weird. The longer you stayed with Gus, the worse you got, for whatever reason. I don't know why, but quarterbacks just did not age well. And you ask any Auburn fan, that was, like, one of their biggest gripes, is, like, they were so good early on with Gus, and they got worse over time in the program, and that just is weird, and that's not how things should go. Obviously, he was the OC with Gus. Strong ties to Gus Malzahn at UCF, and they give him a lot of credit for that. And I'm like, how much of that was Gus? It's like hard. It these coordinators you feel for, where it's like, if anything goes well, it's like, oh, well, that's, I mean, it's clearly Gus and what Gus is doing. And then it's like, if they're struggling, it's like, well, that's, he trusted the wrong guy here. He brought in Chip Lindsey, and we gotta get Rhett Lashley back in here. He was the guy. Kenny Dillingham was the real brains of the operation. Like, that's where we've got to go. I'm with you, though. Like, Phil Longo, who we'll talk about in a bit, to Wisconsin, like, the difference from what Drake May was playing in this past year, I mean, I'm guessing he signed off on it. I'm sure he's a part of the process here, but I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say, like, he's had some offenses that have averaged 30 points a game in 8 of his 11 seasons, which was one of the things they put out for PR, like, at least 30 points in 8 of his 11 seasons as a full-time staff member at the collegiate level. Caleb Barker had some good years at Troy with him, but he really didn't work out at Troy. I don't know. Like, I think you're right. I think this is one where I'm like, if I had to hedge one way or the other, which way this goes, I don't think this goes well for North Carolina. I don't think this goes well for Drake May. Uninspiring hire to me.
Especially because it's like, we've seen Mac Brown on the sidelines. No disrespect here, but he's putting very little input in on that offensive game plan. It's all the CEO,
man. That man is the CEO coach, the ultimate CEO.
He's just lucky if he's on the right channel as all the other coaches on his headset.
Hey, Mac Brown's a treasure. I love Mac Brown. Which hire should excite a fan base the most, Matt Green, among this list that we have not named?
You know what the sexiest hire is. We all know what the sexiest hire is. It's Bobby Petrino. Because nothing says sexy like Bobby Petrino, you know? Mm-hmm. No, but Bobby Petrino, it's just like, we all have our opinion of Jimbo Fisher and his personality, and we all have an opinion of Bobby Petrino and his personality. So everyone's just like, this is a train wreck, and it's going to be hilarious, and A&M is just going to crash and burn, and all these five stars are going to transfer out, and Jimbo's going to get $80 million to leave. We can all see it happening, but Bobby Petrino is a really good offensive coach. I think that's what some people are forgetting. Like, 119-56 as a head coach. Like, this guy was a really good head coach. Head coach for 14 years in college football. 5 top 10 offenses, 9 top 20 offenses in 14 years. But he also did it so many different ways. Like, you look at this first run at Louisville with, like, Brian Brohm, and was it LaFours? Was that one of the guys? He had a name like that. It's like one of, like, his first 02. I don't know. I have to look it up. But Brian Brohm, like, the straight up pocket
was
passer.
Was it LaFever?
No, Dan LaFever. That was Central Michigan.
Yeah.
Look, it's one of Petrino's first years at Louisville. But
LaFleur sounds right.
They had, like, 3 top 5 offenses in a row. You look at what he did at Arkansas, like, with just a prototype, like, NFL kind of quarterback, like Ryan Mallett. And then also what he did with Lamar Jackson at Louisville, and just
Stephon LaFleur.
There you go. So the fact that he had just had so many different good offenses, so many different ways, like, I feel like you can trust Petrino's going to, like, figure out, like, you know, we know A&M's got talent. So figure out what the strengths and weaknesses are, like, what this team can do well, and, you know, and get the most out of them. I think this is a pretty big time hire. Like, Will something happen and Jimbo and him, like, blow up on each other? Like, I'm sure. It seems inevitable. But Bobby Petrino is a damn good offensive coordinator. So, like, you look at Arkansas was 91st. His first year at Arkansas, they were 91st in the country in offense. Next 3 years, they were 9th, 17th, and 15th. Like, at Arkansas, like, we almost forgot Arkansas could be good at football because of some down years there before Sam Pittman arrived again. But Petrino's a really good offensive coach, so I feel like it's one of these things like Brian Kelly with his accent and stuff that everyone wanted it to be a failure so much they were convinced that it was going to be. Like, I feel like that's kind of how this is. Like, you're just kind of, oh man, I can't wait for this to go off the rails. And it's like, Petrino's a really good coach, and if he's got full reign of the offense, I mean, why would it not be successful?
Yeah, I just, optics don't matter to A&M, right? Like, this stat, like, it's going to be Petrino, DJ Durkin, and Jimbo Fisher. Like, just don't care at all about the optics here in College Station. Like you said, he's had success wherever he's gone. Like, in 2017, his last year, I think, at Louisville, Lamar, did he win the Heisman in 2017 or 2016?
It was 2017 was Baker.
So he had won it the previous year. They finished second in program history for yards per game. They were averaging like 544 yards a game. Three top five scoring offenses in his career. I mean, he compiled 119-56 record in 14 seasons as a head coach. Like, the dude just wins everywhere. And like you said, the other thing about this is, I mean, A&M's offense was so bad. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if Jimbo is really handing off the keys, which is the other part of this, that, like, he said, and everything right now on January 15th is Petrino's going to be able to run this the way Bobby Petrino wants to run this. We have not seen an offense that looks anything close to what Bobby Petrino ran at Louisville. Arkansas, he blends it. Whether it's Ryan Mallett, Lamar Jackson, the guy just figures out a way to create yardage and to put together an electric elite offense. But I don't know, man. I'm just uncertain that Jimbo is actually going to hand off the keys 100% to Bobby Petrino. Like, that is my thing. It's like, yeah, he can respect him as much in the world. He's an older dude. They're on the block. It's a little bit different with Petrino, been a head coach multiple times. Like, there's a different sign of respect there, I'm sure. And Petrino obviously left UNLV and Barry Odom after like 3 weeks of being there to take this job. And it's like, if he really thought there's a chance that Jimbo was not going to take his hands off, I doubt he takes it. But I mean, it's something to consider. Like, are we sure that Jimbo is going to be completely hands off and be a CEO coach now? Because that will make or break what happens here with Petrino in College Station. Is like, what is this going to be completely by Petrino's offense, or is Jimbo going to meddle a little bit?
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. Obviously we don't know Bobby Petrino as a person, but I feel like we know this guy's got a big enough ego that he's not just going to come be offensive coordinator and someone else is really running the show. Mm-hmm. And you also, like you said, from an optics standpoint, like, we heard about Petrino to A&M like a month or so ago. Like, it was a while ago that was kind of a rumor, but it took a while for that to actually happen. And your just natural instinct or your natural thought is it probably took some back and forth on like, okay, I have to have complete control, or like there's some sort of negotiation on like why it took so long, even though it was rumored for so long. And I would think that's because Petrino's gonna get his way. He's gonna run the offense. So I as good as Jimbo Fisher has been, like, he also needed a come to Jesus moment about after missing a bowl game. Like, yo, you gotta check your ego at the door. Like, we need to figure out what to do with this offense. And I think there's no way that someone like Bobby Petrino is gonna come in and not have full run of the offense.
Yeah. We'll see. That makes A&M way more interesting going into next year. I mean, just what this is going to look like with Connor Weigman and company. Haynes King, do you realize he was at Georgia Tech now? I'm like just going through the transfer portal quarterback.
I did.
And like, Haynes King's just over here. He might be under center week one for the Jackets on the flats. Which fan base do you think turns on this coordinator hire the fastest? Can I answer this one, Matt Green?
Oh, yeah. Hit me.
It's going to be Dowell Logan's. This one is the Rich Gangarello of 2020.
Now remind the listeners where he's from, where he's at now.
He was the tight ends coach at Arkansas most recently with Sam Pittman and that staff. He's been around the NFL for a really long time, bounced a lot of different jobs. It's not good when you Google the history and just what his NFL tenure was like when named worst NFL play caller in 2017, I think.
Is that bad?
Yeah, 2017. The offense was 29th in points per game, averaged 16.7 yards, or 16.7 points per game, 29th in total offense, and averaged 291 yards. You just go up and down the list. Like,
I mean, he coached quarterbacks for the Browns and the Bears in the mid-20-teens, so obviously success speaks for itself. Track record speaks for itself.
I mean,
only elite quarterback play has ever come out of Cleveland
Chicago. It's not good, Matt Green. Like, it's just, this is one of those, like, Shane Beamer has been very defensive about this hire, obviously, this offseason, that a lot of people wanted him. It's like, man, two things can be true. Where they were not in on Garrett Riley and being annoyed that, like, that's out there. Where it's like, maybe they didn't. Maybe, like that might be a real thing. It's like, they were not talking or interested in Garrett Riley and that they did really want Dal Logan. Like, that can be true. But it's also like, we can look, South Carolina fans who are celebrating, yeah, like, good luck with Garrett Riley. We're good over here with Dal Logan. It's like, what world are we living in? This offense was atrocious for every week of this season, this past year, except for the last two. I don't know what the mass exodus, like, you get Spencer Rattler back. I mean, I guess that's nice, but Jaheim Bell is now a Florida State Seminole. You go up and down the list, Marshawn Lloyd is out the door. I don't know how you don't look at this situation in South Carolina and go, oh, this is the Scangarello all over again, where it's like, hey, we got the NFL experience. He's been an offensive coordinator. But every 49er fan was telling Kentucky fans, like, this is not going to go well. Like, good luck. He was the QB coach, and not exactly the same situation, because if you look in Brian Greasy, who's now the QB coach in San Francisco, doesn't matter if it's Brock Purdy, Trey Lance, and Jimmy Garoppolo, they're soaring pretty well. They don't seem to miss Rich Gangarello. And that, obviously, the Kentucky offense imploded this past year, and they bring back Liam Cohen, who's actually good and going to do good things for the Wildcats. But, man, I think this is a disaster hire, and I think this is the one that fans turn on the fastest of anyone in this coordinator change list, and the South Carolina fans who are laughing at Clemson bringing in Garrett Riley, I think it's going to change very quickly when Cade Klubnik is a Heisman favorite through 6 to 7 weeks and Spencer Rattler has more interceptions than touchdowns like this past year. Like, it's just, I don't see it going well. I really, really don't. And that's not because we're at this forever war with Shane Beamer versus Josh Heupel and the Tennessee South Carolina fan base. I don't think this is a good hire. I think this is the one that just, I don't think it works out. I could be wrong, obviously, but that's my guess, is the one that people turned on the fastest.
Yeah, I could see it. I think it's also, it is part of that kind of narrative thing where it feels like you want this to happen because of Shane Beamer going on that rant about it. It's just like, he felt too defensive about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you just kind of look at his track record and, you know, obviously he's coaching the NFL, and that's, can't necessarily say, well, you can't coach, you're a below average coach in the NFL, so you're not going to be a good offensive coach in college. Like, it's not always the case, but I mean, if you look at the places he's been, like, from, he's actually been offensive coordinator the last 5-6 years before Arkansas, it's the Bears, like, bottom three or four in the NFL. It's the Dolphins, bottom three or four in the NFL. Like, the Jets, I think, maybe have been the literal worst offense in the league both years he was the offensive coordinator. Like, it is the NFL, but, like, with what college and, like, NFL teams are taking fired college coaches these days with Cliff Kingsbury. So, like, it's not necessarily this, like, NFL is superior to college. Like, there's different offensive or there's different minds that can coach this sport. It just such a different skill set that goes into being pro or college. So it doesn't necessarily rule him out, but he hasn't really had much success, much track record of success of any of the offenses he's been at. So in South Carolina, like you said, like they're one of, I think, one of the sadder stories of this transfer portal kind of era of just like a team that really did feel like they had their breakthrough season. And it's just like all the key players left and there's like nothing to show for it. And it's, there's not much talent on that South Carolina offense. And so like ultimately that's what the players are the ones that have to make the plays. So I think Dowell Logan, he could be the one that the fan base turns on, even if I'm not sure it's his fault, because South Carolina doesn't look too hot right now.
From his Wikipedia page, it's probably never good. Logan's, is it Logan? It's just Logan's, right? It's spelled Logan's, huh?
I'm not sure 100%.
Like, I think it's Dowell Logan's, but I don't know. I've heard different people say different things, and I don't want to be disrespectful, so I don't know if it's Dowell Logan's or, but it's spelled O-L-O-G-G-A-I-N-S. Dowell Logan's. I don't know. But either way, it says here, Logan spent 2014 as the quarterback's coach for the Cleveland Browns. He was an advocate of drafting Texas A&M quarterback Johnny Manziel. That didn't really go well.
That's his entire legacy. That's the only thing about
Cleveland Browns. That's the only sentence he got about for the Browns.
This guy wanted to draft Johnny Manziel, so there's that.
I don't know, but yeah, that's what I'm going to say bombs the most. We have a couple left here. Sean Lewis, who was the Kent State head coach, he goes to Colorado. I think this is a sneaky, interesting one because, look, we have no idea what Colorado is going to be in year one for Prime. Part of the issue that I think people are overlooking when it comes to Colorado, at least in 2023, and we've talked about it, the Pac-12 is freaking loaded at the top, Matt Green. Like, Cam Rising's back. Utah's not going anywhere. Caleb Williams and USC's not going anywhere. Washington's not going anywhere. Michael Penix Jr.'s back. Oregon and Bo Nix are back. DJU is now at Oregon State. They just won 10 games without him with pretty subpar quarterback play. You go up and down, UCLA gets the Kent State quarterback, right, who Sean Lewis coached. He's going to be under center for replacing DTR at UCLA. They'll be really good with Chip Kelly. People are expecting like the quick transition, and I think there's a lot of hype, and obviously he's recruiting well, doing really well in the portal, but like I still have questions. But one of the things to remedy that, and this is something that Heupel utilized early on at Tennessee, was like, hey, don't have my guys yet. This is not like, it's going to be really hard. We lost a bunch of scholarship guys after what happened at the end with Jimmy Pruitt. We got to do something to help expedite this process. We got to do something to like give us an advantage when we have a dearth of talent to what we're going to be up against most Saturdays. That's tempo. Like, tempo was just killing people in 2021. For the Vols. Like, that was what they did, and they utilized to get people off, like Javonte Payton, immediate first play touchdown at Kentucky, and things like that, where like the tempo just caught so many folks by surprise week in, week out, and it was just hard to prepare for, even if Tennessee could not match talent wise with whoever they were playing week to week. I mean, they were up on Georgia after the first quarter with the tempo, and Georgia had to adjust, and they did, and crushed them in the second half. But like, that is something that you have to do, is you have to find ways to balance out that lack of talent. And this is a lot of transition for Colorado. All that to say, Sean Lewis runs a really fast scheme. He just took the team to their first ever bowl win, Kent State. They're fast, quick snaps. The offense is wide open. A lot of Baylor, Heupel-esque stuff to this offense, I think. From Pete Thamel, who writes for ESPN, he said his offense is a descendant of the old school Baylor offense, which helped make devastating tempo vogue in college football more than a decade ago. This year, Kent State finished with the fastest offense in the group of five and the fourth fastest offense in college football. According to ESPN stats and information, it averaged 30.1 seconds of real time between snaps. Sources told ESPN that one of the appeals of Lewis working in Colorado, this is super interesting, Matt Green, was that breakneck pace combined with the altitude in Boulder will wreak havoc on opposing defenses. I love this. They're going to use tempo and just the elements of Colorado and being out there in the mountains and being above elevation. We're going to outrun you. We're going to be used to the air. We're going to be used to working out in this each and every day. You won't, though, and it's going to be a trouble. Like, I am extremely fascinated about this little kernel here for Sean Lewis, if that's their strategy. This is the little things you have to do to jumpstart a program. What do you think, Matt Green?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a huge magnifying glass on everything that's happened with Colorado this year. And so I think, they could make some noise. It's just hard to see, like, this isn't basketball. You know, it doesn't take, like, you know, a guy could come in, get three or four players and, like, completely change a program. Like, you know, Colorado's still got a long way to build, but, you know, I'm not going to count Dion out, but I don't know if 2023 is the year, just because, like you said, the Pac-12 is pretty loaded.
But either way, I think they're going to be must-see television right away. I think that much is clear. Last big one, and we'll quickly hit on Barbados, Mississippi State, and Jay Hill to BYU. I have some Jay Hill thoughts that I think this is right up my alley as a Kalani Sitake and BYU guy. Phil Longo, I think, was the most bizarre hiring of the cycle, Matt Green. Would you agree?
Bizarre how?
Luke Fickell does not run, like, Phil Longo's an air raid disciple. Like, he got his offense from Mike Leach back when Mike Leach was the OC at Kentucky. We've never seen Wisconsin run anything close to the air raid. Whatever, like, you want to call Wisconsin offense, it's been the antithesis of Wisconsin football forever. We've never seen this, Matt Green. Like, I think Phil Longo to Wisconsin and Luke Fickell's staff is one of the more under-talked about. Like, we are not ready to process how weird Wisconsin football is going to look this fall, Matt Green. Like, they're going to be running RPO, downfield assaults. Tanner Mordecai is going to throw, like, 60 touchdowns, and you're going to be like, what am I watching right now? Are we sure this is Wisconsin? This is not the Wisconsin we have spent 30 years of our life being used to. Like, it's completely different. Like, we're not ready.
Absolutely. I think, do you think Luke Fickell said, hey, I want the job here because I'm going to make it the exact same as it's always been. Oh, you're hired. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, you gotta change it up. So I think this is why, another reason why Luke Fickell is, like, maybe my favorite hire from this off season. I feel like Wisconsin, it seemed like, you know, we didn't really necessarily know, like, Paul Chryst, like, that's not necessarily a sexy name. You know, he got the Wisconsin job and he did fine. Like, to see them actually go out and get a big name, like a guy that I think everyone would call a top 10 coach in this sport, to go out and get a guy like Fickell, like, that was huge. And Fickell's definitely got plans to change the way they're doing things in Wisconsin. So I'm a big fan of that one.
You're really high on this one. And I think, I am unsure how it's going to go for Fickell, Wisconsin. I think it was interesting that he took this because I thought he would just wait out Ohio State and Ryan Day getting an NFL job. But he took this one. That is not to say that he still couldn't make the jump to Ohio State if it opened up in a couple years. But Tanner Mordecai, I mean, is he immediately the best quarterback Wisconsin's had since Russell Wilson?
I mean, probably. And you just look at what Wisconsin, I think the reason I'm so high on it is just because Wisconsin has such a high floor. Mm. Like, they're never a bad team. Like, they're like Iowa, but even better. Like, they're just, you just know exactly what you're getting. So if someone, like, not necessarily comparing them to Georgia, but they've had Georgia-esque success over the Mark Richt period to what Wisconsin's been the last 10, 15 years or so. Like, they've been a really good program. The right guy, like, he could potentially get them winning Big Ten championships again and potentially getting in the college football playoff, obviously with a 12-team playoff, an even better chance. But I think Wisconsin just has a very high floor. They're just a really respectable program. And Fickell could take them to that next level.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. If it ultimately unfolds that way, but I just think it's going to be fun no matter what Wisconsin looks like. Like, they're just going to be such a fascinating team to watch. And like you said, they've always had this high ceiling. I would have been more excited if Jim Leonard stayed on as DC, but I totally understand why it's kind of awkward when you're angling for the full-time gig and you don't get it. You're like, I'd rather not go back to being an assistant and being the DC. That's just kind of weird. Mike Tressel is the DC, and I don't know if that's Jim's brother. Is that Jim's brother?
Is Jim Leonard taking another job?
He is not, absolutely. I don't think.
Okay.
I do not think he has another job, if I'm unless I'm mistaken. I did not see he got hired.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't see it. But he's mentioned as Alabama defensive coordinator options. So maybe that's where Jim Leonard winds up.
Shoot, honestly, that would make a lot of sense. I think Jim Leonard, I was thinking he could be a guy who even gets a defensive or NFL defensive coordinator job or something like that.
What are we saying? We know it's going to be co-DC, Jeremy Pruitt, and Jim Leonard at Alabama going into next year.
Jeremy Pruitt, I honestly didn't even consider that. And that would make a lot of sense. Alabama's defense had a lot of success with Jeremy Pruitt. Is Jeremy Pruitt toxic at this point? Do you not want a guy like that on your staff?
I think if you're just like Alabama and you're like, bring it, we don't care. Like, just who cares? Like, fair, what are you going to do? Go against Saban?
Because that's what they thought about Lane Kiffin before he got in Alabama.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you just go in the Alabama incubator and it just doesn't matter. Maybe Derek Dooley gets promoted to OC and I don't know. They have some other analysts that I'm not certain about on that staff. But either way, last one, Jay Hill. How much do you know about Jay Hill, Matt Green?
He's App State, right?
No. Jay Hill was Weber State, sir.
I'm confusing him with one of the other guys on here.
Yeah.
Barbay. That's
yeah, he was App State for a year. But no.
Tell me about this guy.
Jay Hill, all kinds of success at Weber State, Matt Green. The dude's a winner. He's won wherever he's gone. His defenses were top-notch at Weber State. One of the best in FCS year over year. They finished top 30 total defense and scoring defense last 5 years. Top 10 passing defense. Just everything top 10, top 15, whatever. He takes over, like, this BYU defense. Like, one of the weird things about them this year was that the offense was still cooking in company. Like, they were fine with Hall, and he was banged up in and out. But, like, they have a lot of talent. They're rolling on offense. The defense, for whatever reason, just fell off a cliff. Like, their defense was horrific this year. They were 93rd nationally in total defense. They were awful all across the board, which was just so weird. It's not BYU football. Jay Hill is, like, the associate head coach and DC. So he worked with Kalani for years when they were both at the University of Utah. Strong connection there. You were starting to wonder, like, this is a little shaky. You got to get this right. Like, BYU, one of their staples. You're getting ready to move to the Big 12. You got to get this cleaned up before you make the jump to the Big 12. And they make a big hire. I think Jay Hill's going to be an awesome, awesome addition to the Cougs. And I think this was a big under the radar hire for them because the offense has been fine and they're going to be fine year over year. But they needed to fix that defense before they came into the Big 12. With a lot of the offenses they're going to be going up against. And I think Jay Hill is going to be a big savior for them.
Yeah, that's pretty big time to get a head coach to come coach your defense. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Is BYU cool getting all these Utah people coming in? How are they feeling about that?
I mean, they have coaches. You coach him. There's a lot of coaches who've coached both stops. I think Whittingham coached at both stops, right?
Sitake is a BYU guy, but he was at Utah for a period. So
let me see. Did Kyle Whittingham ever coach at BYU? I think he was at Utah State. And okay, he was at Idaho State. That's what it was. And BYU. Yeah, he was a grad assistant at BYU in 85.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Not the first time.
No. But either way, both football factories. Utah, they know football, man. Whether it's the Utes or the Cougs, they know how to win a lot of football games.
And this is starting 2023, right?
Yeah, they're
BYU,
in the Big 12.
Cincinnati, they're all in the Big 12. This should be a lot of fun this year.
Well, we
get 1 year of this just crazy Big 12.
It's
so the Big 12 just doesn't even know what to do with the number of teams. They've had 10 teams forever long. We're gonna have 14 in the Big 12 this year, and then I guess go back to I guess it will be 12 once this is all settled.
Yeah, until they just add Memphis and some an SMU or something.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to happen.
Yeah,
hey, Pac-12 does make a move. Fresno State, San Diego State, geography doesn't matter anymore in these conferences, so I won't rule anything out.
Yeah, Pac-12, they're kind of screwed. I feel like it's just San Diego State and Boise are their main two moves for football only, maybe. I don't know. Matt Green, this is a fun exercise. What'd you think?
Yeah, it was good stuff, man. I think so many times we look at the head coaching moves, but but the coordinators can oftentimes be just as important. You know, we've seen guys like Joe Brady, you know, really make a huge impact somewhere like LSU, and like you said, with Todd Monken, like that was really the guy who just completely changed Georgia's offense the last couple years. So you know, one of these guys, Garrett Riley, you know, one of these we could be talking the same in a couple years, that they're the ones that got these teams to break through. So should be interesting.
For sure. Well, Matt Green, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you as always. Congratulations again on the back-to-back national title wins. Hopefully for America's sake, it's not a three-peat.
Before we get off here, I think we need an update on this everything school nonsense that's going on. What did I see? Is Tennessee 14-3 right now in college basketball? And Georgia's 13-4, I want to say? Bulldogs playing some basketball, sir. Everything school up in Athens. Don't you forget.
Let me go.
I will be there. I will be there on the 28th, Georgia, South Carolina. We're going to that game. So, you know, we'll see how the Stegosaurus will be rocking, sir.
Tennessee beat South Carolina by, like, what, 50 the other night?
Mike White changing the game, sir.
Tennessee still number one in defense in KenPom. Number two team overall in the country in KenPom. They lost to Kentucky. That was a rough loss. They missed a billion layups. Poorly officiated game.
Poorly officiated game, he says. Here
it
is.
You didn't watch it.
Here
it comes. You didn't watch it, Matt Green. I'm trying to find Georgia.
I saw Shibwe putting in work on the Tennessee Volunteers. That's what I saw.
126th in offense for the Georgia Bulldogs. We get Georgia here.
Just win, baby. Just win. 13-4. I don't think Georgia won 13 games either of the past two seasons, like, total. I mean, they were at single digits last year for sure. But
I need to see. We play all on the
25th. I just heard a lot of talk about, you know, Georgia hibernating for 8-9 months. You know, it's while all the other schools in the SEC pretend to care about other sports more than football. But watch out now. Georgia, they play some other sports too.
No, you're hibernating. What are we doing? Like, Tennessee is a preseason number two in baseball. They have the number one overall pick as their Friday night starter and Chase Dolander. Like, the optimism is through the roof. Like, they're just going to murder people all season long. And then basketball is still the favorite outside of Bama lost two on Saturday.
You got these facts and such, you know. I'm not going to go there with you. I don't know enough about college baseball to argue with you, but Georgia's got a quality program. Not Tennessee's level, but you know, Tennessee needs to win a championship, you know, before they're talking everything school stuff, you know. That's all I'm saying. Rick Barnes, get this guy to a Final Four, do something.
Man, I'm not taking the bait. I'm not taking the bait late on this Sunday night. Everything school HQ, I'm not worried. It's a good time. We get the Dogs here in Knoxville on the 25th. So I'll be there, and I'll send you live updates.
Is that right?
Yeah, you'll be here. I'll send you some
live updates. It is officially basketball season, though. I mean, we still got NFL playoffs and such happening, but it's finally time that I start to, you know, really dig into this round ball we got going on in college and in pros. So keep a small eye on the pros, you know, while football season's still been going on. But I haven't hardly watched any college basketball, so I gotta ramp it up. You know, be ready for March.
He's just all about the Terry Roberts show over there in Athens. Matt Green, Matt Green, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir, and I will talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
This is Ben Ingram, radio voice of the Atlanta Braves, and I'm here to tell you that you've reached the end of today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. It goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Chase, I think I'm going to hear more about you. I really do. I think you've got a way about you, but you're interviewing. Mm-hmm. Pleasantness, you're smart. So I think I'm going to hear big things about you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.